Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome. It's April 1st, and for some of you that might, that was an April Fool's Day. But this is a real. This is real. This is not fools. You're actually live with Suzanne on Blog Talk Radio on April 1st, 2024. And I just came out with my my new newsletter, which I do obviously at the beginning of every month. And it's Welcome to April Showers, which presents itself to the new solar eclipse that's coming around the corner on the 8th. Next Monday, a week from today, and it's going to hit to North America. If it comes up from Mexico to Texas, from Texas into the Northeast, and up through Maine, and so it should be a really, really cool thing. And for all you that are already on my newsletter, you can get it. I wrote all a little bits and tips in that from the eyeglass to glasses of what you want to do, but it's pretty cool. It's the second one we've had in the Northern Hemisphere since 2017, I think it was 2017. So it should be kind of a really interesting thing. A lot of things go on anyway in the springtime, because besides the things that are coming up from the ground that we love and like to wade through to all these kind of like interesting things. I love the April showers into May flowers, and like I said, with the eclipse coming up, should be a really, really cool thing. So speaking of cool things, I have I always have interesting guests, and I always pride myself on not only having interesting guests, but guests that can somehow, navigate these other parts of our lives that can be all too common sometimes, challenging and wading through and kind of all the above. And beside the fact that I loved her photo, when I read the whole book about the modern trauma toolkit, I said, okay, let's check this out and let's just see how it is. But that's her book. Her name is Dr. Christine Gibson, and I found out she's up in western part of Canada near what we call on the borderline of Montana, where the Rocky Mountains are part of the Mars as they run up there anyway. But anyway, the book is a blueprint navigating the world with stress and adversity all too common, and I was actually just sharing with her that we know that some of that has gone on, and I think it's probably still for many, many people, to be honest with you, an overlay from the pandemic. So this book offers all kinds of strategies how to overcome these challenges, and she does it in a whole kind of like different way. She talks a lot about the brain biology, which for some of my, my raw A people over there with their brains will understand, but she also combines it with healing and growth and gives you a lot of practical applications, which are really very, very important for our day-to-day life. Because I don't know where I was just reading it, but they said if the brain can, cause you to have issues, the brain can also cause you to have unissues, or they can kind of go hand in hand. And I don't have an idea where I was just reading that. But in any case, I was thinking about that when I was looking through some of the stuff of Dr. Gibson's book. But in any case, she is a family trauma therapist, and she's the author of this modern trauma kit. A toolkit, and she's in social media. We'll call it TikTok Trauma Doc, which I think is probably pretty cool to check out. But she has a master's in medical education and has also completed her doctorate and is involved in a lot of academics education. And she lives in the Calvary Fellowship Health area. But in any case, she also runs a wonderful nonprofit organization, which you can go check her out, by the way, at themoderntrauma.com. That's her book. But you can also check her out at Dr. Christine Gibson.net. So we're going to bring her onto the show, and we're going to kind of pick her brain to sort of how we are and how we can get to the next step. Dr. Christine Gibson, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Suzanne.
My pleasure is mine as well, since I know that you have a New York affiliate as well.
I do. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So obviously you're a doctor, and anybody who is a doctor, I don't care what kind of a doctor you are, or anytime you work with people in any kind of a healing capacity, you're always, whether you like it or not, and in my field obviously as well, it's a little bit different area. You're always going to deal with trauma. I mean, that's just, you know, and I without assuming here, I would have to say that somehow you came upon this in terms of your work or in terms of being a physician and seeing different people that are obviously going through all different aspects in their life. And something must have specifically or whatever punctured your brain to say, like, wow, we really need to work with trauma, and we need to be able to come up with something that can help somebody from post, you know, traumatic growth or whatever, you know, aspect is going on to someone's life. So how did we get here?
Such a good question. There's both a personal and a professional answer to that. So I'll start with the professional. I had been doing a lot of medical work in equity-deserving communities, so refugee and immigrant health, addiction medicine, and I didn't realize that a common denominator in why people were struggling was that they had been through trauma. So I found out about a study from like well over 20 years ago now that was done in California that was showing every single physical, psychological, and social issue that a doctor might deal with is exponentially related to how many traumatic events a person goes through in childhood. And I was like, well, that's crazy because we never talk about it and we don't know what to do about it. Even if we were to like find that out, what would we even do? So that was where my professional dive went. I was like, okay, I need to learn as much as I can about what is trauma and how do I actually help somebody who's mm-hmm. had it? And it mm-hmm. turned out there were so many solutions. It's just doctors don't tend to know those solutions. So we can diagnose something like PTSD, but we're not very good at diagnosing complex trauma. We're not very good at helping people through grief and loss, which is obviously mm-hmm. what a lot of your audience is interested in.
Right. Right,
and
right.
We don't have practical skills. So my goal was to get these practical skills into people's hands. Mm-hmm. Personally, I had a little bit of PTSD after surviving the earthquakes in Nepal in 2015.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yeah,
wow.
It was pretty intense.
Yes.
And then also, I did not realize how traumatic being a doctor was. Like, you deal with somebody who's dying, and then you go to the next bed, and you tell somebody they have cancer,
yes.
and then you go to the next bed, and they've lost a baby. And, you know,
yes.
every single thing we're dealing with is some kind of suffering, psychological or physical suffering, some kind of loss. And mm-hmm. we're not very good at acknowledging how much that hurts us. Like, it's a really hard thing to be dealing with all day, but we never,
right.
like, pretend that we're human and, like, it affects us.
Mm-hmm.
But of
mm-hmm.
course it does.
Yes. Of course it does. Well, you know, what I always sort of say to people, which, you know, is kind of an obvious one of what I do, but it's really obvious of what you do as well, is that, you know, there is no way with all that grief going, because it's going through you. I mean, any way you can cut it, it's going through your being, your physical, your mental, your emotional state when you have that as a practice, and you have to say it's a total impossibility that you're not affected by it. I mean, it's just, you know, you're a human being that has all of those emotions and stuff. So yes, all of that grief goes through you because it is a form of grief. Trauma is a form of grief.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a grief of the dream that you had for safety and stability. Like you've
right.
lost something. You generally lost a sense of safety. So grief is very closely associated with trauma. Also, grief does kind of changes our beliefs about the world. Like we believe that bad things can happen to us or people we love. And that is also very much aligned with what trauma does in our brain. It changes our belief about ourselves and about the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read a little bit of how you were a physician in the middle of the pandemic, and you survived the earthquake in Nepal. So, when I read that, I said, yes, you know, she's been there. She's added this onto her repertoire, so to speak, of trauma. And I'm going to add sort of another thing, and I know you're so right, is that I think people are not aware, unless of course you're a therapist or a psychologist or somebody who actually deals in that area, people do not realize how your childhood, whatever that trauma is, never goes away. We work with it. We try to balance it out in our life. But the bottom line is, never goes away.
Yeah. I mean, the past is with you in the present moment, but the past also exists in another field. So there's a lot of different therapies that I use, but one of my favorite new therapies, it's actually not really in my book. I've kind of briefly mentioned it. It's based on tapping, which is self-acupressure, but what you do is you actually work with the person in the present, and you tell them to go travel and visit a past version of themselves to change that past foundational belief. So you'll say, well, what age did you start to believe this thought? And you would actually go back in there and change it. It is so incredible. When I think about the kinds of things that I can do in therapy that relate to what you do as a medium, I do think there's a lot of synergy. I call that quantum therapy when I do it with people, and it's really acknowledging that even though you are not currently that six-year-old, you can still access that six-year-old. That six-year-old who went through some kind of pain is still available for us to work with.
But you got to remember it, right? I mean, that's the trick, is that sometimes we have...
Not necessarily.
No.
No.
Oh.
I do a lot of work with pre-verbal and ancestral trauma as well. So pre-verbal is anything that happens before the age of about 3, which is when we start to create narrative or language-based memories. We call those implicit.
Mm-hmm.
But we can actually work with memories of even the birth. And ancestral trauma is something that we can inherit. So people there's a study showing that babies who were in the womb at the time of 9/11 were born with higher levels of cortisol in their saliva. So what that means is, if your mom survived the trauma of 9/11 and you were in her stomach at the time, you're born with an activated stress system. And that wasn't something that happened to your body. It happened, like, you inherited it. You can also inherit it in your genes. So people who've survived the Holocaust, their DNA was methylated, which means that their genetic code was altered, and the trauma gets passed down through multiple generations. We see it all the time in Black families and Indigenous families. They inherit the trauma without even having gone through it themselves. And that doesn't mean that you can't work on it. This is something that's definitely an area that I work with quite a bit.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what sect it is, but I do know there's a sect in the Japanese culture that you are responsible for your ancestral's actions. So if you had an uncle or a grandfather or whatever it is that, you know, that murdered somebody or did some bad deeds, you inherit that. You are responsible for those ancestral deeds. So, I mean, this is kind of different, but it's kind of sort of in the same category.
Well, I think people don't acknowledge the role that our ancestors had in our lives. And one of the things that I did with my book that I think was quite different than a lot of other books about trauma is I explore what our ancestors knew about healing trauma. So, you know, there is no pill. You can't go to your doctor and say, I want a medication to heal my PTSD. That doesn't work. But we, our ancestors actually knew the kinds of things that worked. So we used to do things like chanting. We used to do circle dances. We used to have community grieving ceremonies. We had rituals. We had all kinds of things that are actually curative for PTSD.
And actually, they're not done as much now as they should be.
Absolutely.
Done as much now as they should be. Because we don't do those ceremonies. We don't do, unless you're in some kind of profession where you actually sort of do that and bring that up. And you're absolutely right. And that's that whole ceremonial family connection community in a lot of ways is not around. And that's created, as I'm sure you know, a whole different kind of world. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So just for FYI,
well,
for everybody, for the number to call in is 347-945-7785, 347-945-7785 if you have any questions for Dr. Christine Gibson on this, what I think is not only an important, incredibly important area, but you know, with the stuff that she's teaching us all at the moment is quite cool. So go ahead, your next thoughts on that.
Well, I think because of a lot of what you teach and what you share relates to grief and loss, I think a lot of people don't relate to that as a trauma. But when we have a loved one, I mean, for one thing, we can lose them in a very traumatic circumstance.
Right.
But trauma is the way that the loss affects us physically. So trauma is experienced in things like nightmares, flashbacks, avoiding certain places that might be triggering. So triggering means that the past is showing up in the present. And any time that the past is showing up in the present, that's trauma. And I just don't think enough people are recognizing that as a trauma.
Wow. So this is obviously when you talk about you know, both post-traumatic growth and how it differs from traditional views of trauma recovery. That's partly what you're talking about.
Absolutely, yeah. So
yeah.
Trauma is not the event that happens. Trauma is our response to that event, like the mind-body
right.
response.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though the mind-body changes because of what you've been through, it can change again. And so it can't go back to the way it was because the past has happened. But that's what post-traumatic growth is it's learning, well, how does my body respond to grief and loss and toxic stress? And what are the ways that I can have more control over that? So what are the ways that my brain has more control? What are my ways that my body can learn new patterns? A lot of this happens in our nervous system. And so people can learn new tools and have more control over their own nervous system. So that's what I'm really teaching folks is what are the ways that you can learn something different, and then you have more choice in how your mind-body system is responding to these events.
So is the polyvagal theory, is that connected with the vagus nerve?
It is. So
uh-huh.
But the vagus word is a bit of a buzzword. It's a part of the nervous system, and it basically slows the body down. So when we go through stress, the body's first response is to fight and flight, which means you want to run away from the thing or you want to fight.
Right, right.
And that makes sense when you think about how humans lived a few thousand years ago and we would run away from a natural disaster or a predator.
Sure, sure.
Or
right.
try to fight off a bear. That made sense back then, but it doesn't really make sense now. So what happens to us as modern-day humans is we get stuck in fight and flight, but there's nothing to fight and there's nothing to run away from. It's just life. So
mm-hmm.
once that gets stuck for long enough, our vagus nerve kicks in and says, okay, we're exhausted. There's nothing to run away from. Let's just shut down for a little while. And the way that shows up is you can't get out of bed. You can't get off your couch. You can't do things that you're supposed to do in the day. And that's a freeze response. And that is what your vagus nerve can create. So part of what I teach in the book, in the Modern Trauma Toolkit, is, well, what is the different way that your vagus nerve could show up that allows you to get out of fight, flight, and freeze? And that's when we say polyvagal theory, because there's two different branches of the vagus nerve, and we can give you more choice over the way that your nervous system is responding to stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's interesting because I was very, you know, I mean, for some reason tuned into the vagus nerve years and years and years ago. I have no idea why I even was. And then I think recently over the last, I don't know, like maybe 10 or 15 years, I've had, you know, a couple people on my shows that have talked about it, which was something like I never knew anybody to talk about, you know, the significance of it. So when I read that through your work, I thought like it's they got to be connected somehow. But it makes a lot of sense about how you're utilizing it now in a different framework.
Yeah, and what I tried to do in the Modern Trauma Toolkit was explain it from a really basic level. Like, I wrote this book at a grade 8 level of understanding. I tried to not use really big words and really big concepts. I wanted everybody to be able to understand this. I mean, honestly, I wrote it for the refugees I work with and people who I see at the addiction clinic who didn't get past grade 6. So I really wanted this to be very basic. So even if people say, ah, I don't understand what she's talking about, this is exactly why I wrote it, is because I really feel like every single human should know this stuff, because so many of us are stressed right now. We have the pandemic, we've got climate change, we've got politicians yelling at each other. There's just so much daily stress in our lives, and I just want people to learn new tools to handle it. That's my goal. That's why I joined TikTok. Like, it is such a random thing for a medical doctor to be on TikTok.
Yeah, I know. This is
so
the TikTok doc. I thought that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I love TikTok. I think it's great. And I've learned so much from other mental health creators on there. But I went on there saying, like, wouldn't it be amazing if people just had more skills to learn how to handle stress? I know I needed them.
Wow. Again, the number to call in is 347-945-7785. My special guest is Dr. Christine Gibson. And the mega book is called The Modern Trauma Toolkit. And yet, of course, you can check that out through her book and as well go online to do it. We're going to take a quick break. And this is Suzanne and Christine. And we'll be back in a moment.
This is Suzanne's website, www.suzannenorthrup.com, for all the latest news, calendar, and for any events. You can also sign up for her newsletter at www.suzannenorthrup.com. That's SUZANENORTHROP.
Welcome back with Suzanne and Dr. Christine Gibson, and again, you can check out her book, The Modern Trauma Toolkit book. It's called, actually, The Modern Trauma Toolkit, and I like, I have to say that I really like what she said, because the what I think is majorly wonderful is that anybody can pick this book up that hasn't been past the sixth grade education, and even if they get it in bits and pieces, and they can formulate it and bring it in, I think is a wonderful thing, because immediately, I mean, I don't have to tell you, when most people think about, you know, medical stuff or psychiatry or, you know, doctor, anything, they immediately think that it's above their level of, you know, concept, or their level of totally understanding, you know, like it goes beyond just the word trauma and how you kind of break that down. And you're absolutely right. You know, this is the PTSD is a very different aspect or different world than you share about this ancestral, you know, sharing. So talk a little bit about the ancestral part, Christine, because I think that's something that people, unless they, like you said, unless they come from indigenous cultures or they come from ceremonial stuff and things that most, obviously, most people in this country, unless they're really seeking spirituality, they don't know what that means, or they don't understand that connection, that it can go from one lifetime to this lifetime, or from, like you said, a child being into the body of 9/11. And I'm not surprised about that because, come on, why wouldn't you be, right? I mean, you're in this vehicle that is is going through all kinds of trauma because who knows? It could have been your husband or your brother that was down in 9/11 while you're pregnant, or you know, I mean, why wouldn't it be? Or you could be live in New York City, and it was impossible to get away from it if you lived here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of different ways to talk about it. The first one I kind of alluded to a bit. It's basically that we always imagine that our DNA, like the genetic code that's inside everyone's cells, is the thing that decides what our body does and doesn't have. You know, do we have blue eyes? Do we have, you know, a hole in our heart? Do we have diabetes? But it turns out that our DNA interacts with the environment, the chemical soup where all of our cells live. And so if a body is really stressed out and they're exposed to all of those chemicals related to stress, things like cortisol, it actually changes our DNA in a permanent way. And that gets passed down to the next generations. So one of the reasons why there's a really beautiful book, I don't know if you've heard of it, but Mark Wolin wrote a book called It Didn't Start With You. And it's related to what might look like to do ancestral healing. So if we imagine that we've always been afraid of buses, and we have no idea why we're afraid of buses, there might be an ancestor who had a bus accident, but we would have no way of knowing that. So Mark Wolin talks about these are the different things that you could do to try to heal these ancestral traumas. I might see something a little bit more generic, like I'm always anxious and I just can't shake the anxiety. That's interesting. In your background, your family was on the front lines of World War I. I wonder how that anxious feeling might relate to how you feel now in the present day. I wonder what might have been passed on through your genes. And we don't have to know the story. We don't actually have to know the details of anything. We can deal with the symptoms, the anxiety, in the present moment. But what we're actually healing is the past.
Got it. And then you combine that with, let's just say, your current problem in your life, and in my world, lots of losses, you know. Obviously have people, I have parents that lose more than one child. And that's a whole other level added onto it. And what I've sort of discovered, which I would probably not be surprised if you probably are aware of that as well, is particularly if I'm dealing with someone that, you know, a younger person that's crossed over from suicide, invariably, I'd say 90% of the time, they weren't the only one in that family that died from suicide. I mean, you know, and you don't have to go back that far. It's very common within, you know, if one child did it, maybe an uncle did it or a grandfather did it. And that's within a family within the period of time that you might know, as opposed to, you know, that it was far back into your ancestry. So I have a story that I share sometimes with people, and it was about a student that I had for many years, and she was really looking forward to getting married in her life and whatever it was, but in the meantime, every time she would come to me, whether it was in class or personally, these twin girls would show up. You know, and I'd say to her, did your mom lose, you know, twin babies? And she goes, oh, no, I was an only child. And it just, like, kept coming up and coming up and coming up. And it was like, it just sort of became, like, really weird. Anyway, going down the road, she met this rabbi, and they got married. And lo and behold, I think a year or two after they were married, she had twin daughters. And so it came up again when I saw her, and I kept saying, like, I keep seeing these twin girls now. Now that I see a manifestation of twin daughters, this is not something that I keep picking up, you know, around you in the sessions. And so she left, you know, she left my space, and she went home to her mother, and she said, okay, Mom. She goes, like, I can't do this anymore. You know, Suzanne, how could she be so wrong about this? Now all of a sudden I happen to have had twin daughters, and this is coming up again that there are two twin daughters also in spirit. What, please, please tell me. And her mom broke down. And what happened when she broke down, she shared with her that she had lost pretty much all her family in the Holocaust. And so she was so frightened to death of when she lost these babies. And honest to herself, she called it a curse because there had been the death of her entire family in the Holocaust. And then the first two children that she has, they die on her. And so when these would come up in the session with Cheryl, it would be like, my mom keeps telling me I'm an only child. And it wasn't until she had her daughters. And what was so interesting, which I thought was really pretty cool, that when she said she felt that she brought those daughters in to help heal her mama and her of all the loss in her family, that those were gifts that came in to help somehow as best as you possibly could neutralize all the loss that she had had and obviously had taken on. So I've never kind of forgotten that story. It's one of those you just, you know, and it's not a story.
It
truly happened. Yeah, and you know, it's like I said, it's not, you know, as you well know, there's a lot of those stories in the Naked City that you get, and they just sort of they stay with you, and you see like how that act, because she had lost, like I said, because of the loss of all her family. And of course, I do that a lot of my work. I have a lot of, obviously, you know, clients that have lost family in the Holocaust, and you know, I also live in New York. So there's no way you can get away with it when you live in New York with the population. But you know how that really does stay with you, and no question that is a trauma, and no question that's a child of trauma because you're raised with it.
Yeah.
And yeah. So when you were talking about the indigenous cultures, and as we well know, you know, a lot of the indigenous cultures.
Well, and let's give an example, like the story that you just described. The kind of thing that I might see is a person who always feels abandoned, like people will leave them, and they're always giving like a fawn response, like I'm going to please you so you don't leave me, and they'll be a people pleaser, and their trauma will be something that they can't put their finger on. But let's say, for example, they were a twin pregnancy and the other twin went away. They wouldn't be able to articulate that. They couldn't put it into words, but there's something in them that feels like people will leave. And that's the kind of thing that is a trauma that people don't necessarily recognize that they have, but it just shows up as a pattern in their daily life. Why am I always anxious? Why am I people pleasing? Why am I trying to make everything perfect? And a lot of these patterns that we fall into, they do relate to trauma, whether or not we can verbalize it. We might not know the story.
Yes. Well, and there's the basics of that, you know, of being abandoned, that, you know, if you're abandoned, how you know, how can you be loved, or you know, because it's that whole sense of if you've had that in your life and then you get into a relationship, it's you're always questioning, does that person really love me? I mean, it comes down to, you know, some really raw basic stuff, real raw basic stuff. And you're right. So they kind of overcompensate for, that's kind of what you're intimating in terms of, you know, your emotional state. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that can be changed. So a lot of people feel like, well, this is just me. This is the way I am. But you do have more choice over it. And that's what I've learned. I certainly didn't learn these tools in medical school, but over the last 8 years or so, I've just been taking a deep dive into every single trauma therapy I could find and got certified in a lot of them. And that's why I wanted to help people create their toolkit, because not everyone has the same problems, not everyone has the same solutions in their brain, because, you know, even addiction, is a solution until you find a better solution. So I never, you know, make a person feel ashamed about the way that they behave or the things that they've found to cope. All of that is working until you find something that works just as well or better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. I totally understand that, because that's what I experience so much, obviously, when people, particularly when they lose a spouse or a child, you know. And that becomes their coping mechanism, how they can just sort of, you know, get up in the morning, put their shoes and socks on, and figure out their day, you know. And I'm sure that that's kind of what you do. So we're going to take a quick break in a minute, but just give me sort of an example of one of your tools.
Well, so I have, maybe before the break, we'll do a brain-based one, and then after the break, I'll describe a body-based one. So a brain-based one might be affirmation.
That sounds perfect. Okay.
So most people have heard of affirmations. It's saying things like, I deserve good things, my home is, you know, my haven. Those are statements that sometimes you believe and sometimes you just wish you believed. So an affirmation is the exact same thing, but you just stick a what if in front of it. So what if I deserve good things? And for a person who's been through trauma or toxic stress, that's way easier to say or imagine than the affirmation, because sometimes the affirmation just makes you feel like you're lying to yourself. So an affirmation is planting a seed of possibility. The opposite of trauma isn't feeling good all the time. The opposite of trauma is flexibility, having different possibilities for the ways that your brain might think or the different behaviors you might choose. So all we're trying to do is to say, what if there was a different way to think about the future or think about the past? And affirmations are really helpful for that. So it was one of my first really viral videos on TikTok was affirmations. So we'll start there.
Yeah, and I would assume, without assuming, that you probably had great response to that.
I did, yeah, like 1.2 million people. They loved it. So, yeah, for a lot of people, when they try affirmations, it works. And for some people, affirmations work better. So it's just trying to give people different tools. That's why I like learning all these things that I can share, is to say, well, what are the different things people have tried? So affirmations may work for some of your listeners, and for some other ones, they might want to try something different. Just stick a what if in front of it and see how it feels.
Right, and I think when you're doing that, I think that's the first time I've heard that word, actually, affirmations, and I think it's very cool, because it's putting a possibility. Where the other one, you're right, it can make you feel like you're making it up, or it's not real, or you would like it to be that way, as opposed to there could be a possibility in here.
Exactly.
With the if. Oh, that's really, really cool. Okay, we're going to have to think about that one. Again, the number to call, guys, is 347-945-7785 here. We're going to take another quick break. I'll be back in a minute with my special guest, Dr. Christine Gipstein. And you can check her out at themoderntrauma.com. That's her book. And I would definitely say you can definitely check her out on her TikTok doc. Is it TikTok doc? Do I have it right?
TikTok Trauma Doc.
That's right, TikTok Trauma Doc. I knew I was missing a word in there. Perfect, TikTok Trauma Doc. That's actually quite clever, I must say. we'll take a break. We'll be right back in a moment.
This is Suzanne's website, www.suzannenorthrup.com, for all the latest news, calendar, and for any events. You can also sign up for her newsletter at www.suzannenorthrup.com. That's SUZANENORTHROP.
Welcome back, everybody, and I welcome Dr. Christine Gibson. So, I like this. I'm into this, like this information type thing now. So, the information is supposed to plant seeds of possibility to innovative solution studio, a method for catalyzing change. Yes?
Oh no, that's a different thing. That's actually that's like a group work, the solution studio. And information is more just like a thought in your own brain. So have voices in our head, and sometimes we have a little more control over what they say. And for lots of people who are anxious, the what if is generally, well, what if this is a disaster? And so we want to plant a different possibility. What if this works out? If our brain is saying, well, you know, you're a terrible person, awful things always happen to you, we just want to plant the seed. What if I deserve good things? What if good things could happen for me? So information is just trying to flip the switch on what our brain might do if we have been exposed to trauma. So it's something that we can deliberately think of. And anytime that a person's noticing that their brain is trying to send them negative signals, the informations can help them turn it around.
Right. And this is what you consider to be like brain biology, so to speak.
Yeah, it's in medicine we call it neuroplasticity, and what that means is brain rewiring. So your brain gets wired based on your biology and all of the experiences that happen to you. And when we do therapy, we're rewiring the brain. But the really good news is you can do that on your own. There's lots of different tools where you can learn how to rewire.
And that's why we have what is called, that's a good intro to the Modern Trauma Toolkit.
Yeah, so I promised some body-based solutions after the break. So I briefly mentioned tapping or self-acupressure. This is something related to 10,000-year-old Chinese medicine practices. And Western medicine,
I'm familiar with tapping, yes. Yeah,
so Western medicine doesn't understand why it works, but it doesn't stop it from working. There's really good research showing that it can help with cravings, it can help with anxiety, it can help with compulsions like addiction, and it can help with trauma or PTSD. So tapping is something I always teach my patients during the first couple of sessions, just so they have a way that they can calm their own nervous system down. And the way I describe it is it's like a volume dial in your head. If you have anxiety and it's at like a 10 out of 10, what if you could turn the volume down to a 2? And just it's still there, but it's just more comfortable for you. You can do the same with sadness or cravings or grief. You can turn the volume dial. And so in the book I have the sequence of the different parts of the body where you tap, and then there's a video, a 20-minute video, showing people how to do it, and an illustrated diagram. So this is something I wish teachers knew and parents knew, and it was just in the water. It's something that we would teach everybody so that people just knew how to handle big emotions better in a way they prefer.
So you have this, well, you talk about it in the book, but you don't have the, so is this video on YouTube, or is this part of your TikTok thing, or on your website for people to check it out, or what's
the
place?
Yeah, they can only check out the video through the book. The book has a QR code that links to the videos.
I got it.
But on my TikTok, I have a lot of it there too. So the TikTok, and I don't think I have any tapping on YouTube yet. I will be doing more on YouTube in the future, but for now, under TikTok, I have a folder called Healing Skills. And if you go there, you can see a lot of the body-based practices, including tapping, havening, which is just touching different parts of your skin, and it causes a more calm brain signal. And then another one is called tremoring, and that's releasing all of the pent-up tension in your body. So the same way like a dog or a horse can shake off their body and then get on with their day, humans mm-hmm. can do the same thing.
So when you, I mean, I know the tapping. So tell people who don't know a thing about tapping how they go about doing that.
Well, it's a bit hard to describe over radio, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
Tapping uses the different parts of the acupuncture meridian system, so where the energy travels through your body, and it maps out the sequence related to emotions. So it was first created using different kinds of emotions. So there would be one sequence for sadness and one for loss and one for anger and one for anxiety. But what they did in the end with EFT is they combined all of the different sequences related to emotions and they put the most powerful tapping points in one single sequence. So anything that you're experiencing, any emotion at all, you can use this one tapping sequence. And you're just using your fingertips to tap different parts of your skin. So you start with the side of your hand, and then there's a whole sequence on different parts of the head, the face, and the chest. And once you've done that sequence, you actually have less intensity to that emotion. So that's what the research shows. It's such an easy thing to do.
And so you describe that, obviously, in your book as well. Well, that one,
I do,
that,
yeah.
You said
there's
that has to be, yeah, okay. Well, there's a chapter on that one. I was going to say, because that one, some, you know, people may need to see a visual about that one. I'm not, you know. But
yeah, there's an illustration in the book, and then the book has the QR code, which takes you to the page with the video. So some people learn better by reading. Some people learn better by seeing. I just wanted to provide all the options. So there's a few different videos related to the book on the website.
That's cool. Well, these QR codes are like a new thing.
besides
being ordering on the menus, restaurants, you can use them for whole these other things here, like too. And tapping is sort of like a really good one. So obviously, you know, when you. I know you meet with families because you're a family physician, and I'm assuming, without assuming here, that if you are a family physician, does that mean you meet with individual people within a family, or you meet the family as a group if the family is going through issues, or you know, how do you address that?
No, I do more trauma therapy than family practice these days. I do. You know, not as much family medicine. I don't have a family practice anymore. So I still work as a family doctor a little bit, but I do mostly trauma therapy now. But when I was a family doctor, I only really saw families if parents would bring their kids in. So it's not like I do family counseling. And then generally as a family doctor, you work with a person one-on-one with their mental health and their physical health, but I just do more of the mental health side of it now.
Yes, well, that's I think is major, and I mean I don't have to tell you, but one of the things that I have, you know, obviously not discovered, but you know, I know that if anybody besides the obvious of that were affected by the pandemic was children. They lost their whole sense of those seriously formative years for many of them, of what we would call normality, whatever that means, and they still and you know, like for example, only children that they get their socialization by school, and not being able to do it, it points in their life what that was really really important, and I that's. Something I've personally dealt with a lot of the parents that I know that they've lost children that there was kind of a repercussion from that happening. So I'm sure that was something you as well probably equally was challenged by.
You know, it's interesting that you've seen that because statistically there was actually less suicide in kids during post-pandemic. So of course, it has happened to some people, but statistically, the numbers actually dropped.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But kids do get stressed out from all kinds of things. Uh-huh. So lots of kids are worried about the climate emergency. Lots of kids are worried about their future because, you know, everyone's talking about they can't find a job and they can't find a place to live. And on TikTok, this is the kind of thing I'm seeing a lot of. I think social media just makes kids more stressed out because they think there's more expectations of them because they see all of these people seemingly successful on Instagram, but it's not necessarily the whole story. I think there's a lot of things in modern times that are stressing kids out. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So the pandemic is definitely a piece of it. But, I mean, let's be honest, they only missed school for like 2 or 3 months. It wasn't like it was 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, that's not true. In Uganda, it was. They somehow closed the schools in some countries for a really long time. But in most North American settings, it wasn't really that long. It's more just one more thing for kids to worry about. And there's so many that they worry about now. Yeah.
Right.
That's why I really think kids should learn better tools to manage stress. And this is the kind of thing I think we should be teaching in school.
Right, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, I mean, I think it's a little bit different now, but it used to be like, well, you know, what do you got to worry about if you're a kid, right? You're supposed to be able to, you know, go out, hang out with your kids and friends and all that other stuff and do all that, but children are in a very different world now than they were, you know, even 10 years ago. Forget about 20 or 30 years ago. So it's a sort of a whole new world, so to speak. A whole new world.
Yeah. And that's why I use the word modern. When I wrote the Modern Trauma Toolkit, I was saying, like, in modern times, we actually talk about racism. We actually talk about sexism and the Me Too movement. And people actually talk about things that happened to them. You know, 20 years ago, we didn't have these open conversations.
Yes.
But at the same time, we actually can see in real time, like, I've had a Ukrainian living with me for most of the last 2 years. And they're watching the war on their phones. You know, even though they're not in the country dealing with it firsthand, they are feeling it. They are seeing it. And in modern times, we are so much closer to traumatic events. So things are really different.
Well, yes, through the internet. It's like you can't hide unless you go up somewhere in a mountain that you can't get the internet. And even in the mountains, you can now. Yes, that's absolutely true. There's no moments of just, you know, getting away from it, which is absolutely true. No question about it. And you know, of course, you know, I think that it's interesting that you've had this huge success on TikTok, which is now they're questioning taking it away, and the kids are actually really freaking out. So. You know,
that's
so.
Why I joined TikTok is because I thought the kids are not okay. How can I help them? And I mean, now I realize like nobody's okay. It's just the kids are more loud about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think when the thing came out with the government that they were going to shut it down, there was a phenomenal amount of kids that. Because they can get to any senator or whomever it is by just because they know how to do this stuff. And it was a whole kind of a mat. They're very resourceful, you know. Yes, you know, I'm not going to vote for this. It was really serious stuff. The night that they or whenever they put it through the Congress or however they did, whoever voted on it, whatever it is. So they're going to have to figure out that one. I don't know how they're going to be doing it, but they're most definitely going to sort of figure out that one. But that's a key. But you know, as we both know, children are resourceful. You know, they are resourceful, and the other, I think the other good thing is that we're certainly with a younger generation that not only resourceful, but they do speak their mind. And there's some, you know, plus stuff and minus stuff about that. I think it's interesting you talk about the Ukrainian person that's living with you. And that's actually, to me, that's really not, I'm not a surprise by any means. Because that's her country. That's her heart. That's where her family is. That's where she may feel like she wants to go back to one day in her life.
Well, yeah, she might. We'll see what the future holds. But I think it's just so hard for it to be unpredictable. My mm-hmm. first book was actually involved Ukraine in the future, and I'm glad I hadn't published it because it's so weird that we just have no idea what will remain of Ukraine at the end of this. And, of course, we hope that the country is intact and people will survive everywhere in the country, but we really don't know. And it's so hard for, you know, somebody to have living with this level of uncertainty.
Sure.
But we do, sure. You know, we like there's the only thing certain is change. And I think one of the things yep. humans struggle with is uncertainty. So it's one of the things that we have to come to a greater place of acceptance around it is like, this is uncertain and right here, I'm okay.
Right, and work on those moments, and work on what you can do with your modern trauma toolkit to put them in some kind of balance in your life. So you feel
yeah,
like you have some, you know, a little more control of your life, or you know, the sadness, or the shame, you know, all of those emotionals that are difficult.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's really a sense of agency and control that even though there is uncertainty, I can be okay with that uncertainty. So I have control over my reaction to it. Even though I'm worried about the future, I'm going to take things one step at a time. And I'm going to think about the next 20 minutes instead of the next 20 days or 20 months.
Mm-hmm.
And just think of the ways that your brain adapts better. So a lot of this, there's no one-size-fits-all. That's why I call it a toolkit, is there's just so
right.
many different ways that you might want to change your brain patterns, and there's no one perfect way for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. No, this is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful work that you're doing. So with the last, you know, 2.5 minutes we have left of the show, you obviously have wonderful, wonderful pearls of wisdom. So what's the end of the that you would like to share some of those special pearls of wisdom during this last period of time here as we share the Modern Trauma Toolkit, and it's Dr. Christine Gibson. .net, and you can check her out. You can also check her out by going to www.moderntrauma.com, and of course you can check her out in her TikTok world and Facebook and Twitter and Book Twitter and LinkedIn and all of the she's in all the hot places, as I would say. So
try to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, well,
I guess my parting words of wisdom would be you're not alone. Like, every human experience is something that another human has experienced before. Like, nothing,
mm-hmm.
nothing is new, and we're not alone in the suffering or the joy. And it really is balanced, that as much as there is pain, there is also connection and meaning and purpose. And there's other ways to experience it so we're not so attuned to just the pain. The human brain is programmed to notice the pain, and we can reprogram it so it's not paying so much attention to it.
Mm. Sounds perfect. Wonderful words of wisdom. Well, you have been a delightful guest. Thank you so much. And, you know, I'm going to keep you and check you out and maybe go to your Instagram things, that are your TikTok things, and hear some of your stuff you got going on. But really wonderful work you're doing, my dear. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Suzanne. Enjoy the rest of your day, too.
And you too, as well.
Okay.
And although I'm not going to say stay warm, because you say it's okay out there.
Yeah, I know everyone thinks that Calgary will be super cold, but it's a beautiful sunny day here.
Perfect. Wonderful. Be well
yeah.
and take care. Yes.
Thank you
so
much. You as well.
You're welcome.
Bye.
A wonderful, wonderful guest, and definitely you will check out her book, because she's got some fabulous things. Or you know, whatever age you are, you can certainly go on TikTok and check her out as well. So thank you again, and as always, I want to say that I hope that everything will be yours.
Thank you.